Welcome to This Business of Music and Poetry podcast, where the life of a creative meets the real world. I'm Michael Amade, host World Poetry Open Mic, The Michael Amade Show, author of more books than I should mention, musician, poet, and above all, creative entrepreneur. My collaborator and conspirator in this project is Clifford Brooks, founder of the Southern Collective Experience, host of Dante's Old South on NPR, poet and author of The Draw of Broken Eyes and Whirling Metaphysics, Exiles of Eden, and Athena Departs, The Gospel of a Man Apart. Today's guest speaks about something that hits very close to home. Our guest today is Kimberly Dick. She's the executive director of Autism Speaks, Georgia and Tennessee. She's been involved with the organization for about over 10 years. She became involved after her son, Caleb, had a diagnosis, and she started as a walk volunteer, then as the Walk Now for Autism Speaks chair in 2011. And since then, she's helped Georgia and Tennessee through corporate relationships, awareness, resources, and assistance in passing state and federal legislation. She's developed a strong board of directors, making Autism Speaks Georgia the 13th chapter at Autism Speaks. She currently lives in Atlanta with her husband, Brad, their two children, Caleb and Zoe, and their dog, Griffin. There's a lot of gems in this one. I hope you'll stick with us. This is, without any further ado, Kimberly Dick.
Well, tonight's show is a special one for us, and it tackles something that's in the media a great deal now. And I want to get someone here that's an expert with autism to kind of tell us the telltale signs of it, where resources can be found, and make it overall something a little less scary for our folks. And we're lucky enough to have Kimberly Dick here with us, who is the executive director of Autism Speaks in Georgia and Tennessee, who has been in the organization for over 10 years. Started out when her son was diagnosed, and doing the walks that are now enormously popular here in the state and other places in the nation. And before I rattle on too far and flatter her too much, Kimberly, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for inviting me to participate tonight.
And we love having you here. Give us some of your background in detail on how you got into the organization and what we're doing here in Georgia with Autism Speaks.
Sure. Thank you for your compliment. You called me an expert, and I think I'm far from that, but hope to fill those big shoes. But so as you mentioned, I've kind of been involved with Autism Speaks for 10 years. I started as a volunteer when my own son was diagnosed. When he was two, and just got involved with the organization. It was, you know, in 2005, so we're, you know, a young organization still. But, you know, what we've accomplished as far as awareness and, you know, just a better understanding and acceptance of autism is truly amazing. So I, you know, spend most of my time trying to, you know, spread the word about, you know, what is autism, the mission of our organization, to just better help educate, you know, families and caregivers and the community to just better help support our loved ones on the spectrum.
What drew me to Autism Speaks is the inclusion, the feeling that of being welcome to be able to ask questions. Is that something that that Autism Speaks drives to do? I know that may sound like a silly question, but I find that many people are intimidated to even ask questions. What does Autism Speaks? What does the organization do to make it easy to access your resources and ask questions?
Yeah, no, it's not a silly question at all. So we, you know, we are a small organization, very grassroots. People think that, you know, we are much bigger than we are just because we have so many amazing volunteers like yourself. So thank you for all you do to help, you know, spread awareness and acceptance. So a lot of our resources, you know, are online. They're free for anyone to access. We have free toolkits, so no matter what your question is, we have resources to that. We also provide a free autism response team, and you can contact these individuals either via a 1-800 number or email. We also have a Spanish line, so we have some ART coordinators that are available to communicate in Spanish and sometimes other languages. We just actually, very exciting, we launched our own podcast recently this year and have been, I think we're on episode 7 or 8 right now and are kind of tackling kind of some myths about, you know, autism as well as personal stories of individuals on the spectrum. And, you know, one of the topics that really resonated with me being, you know, a parent is, you know, the topic where we kind of talked about bullying. So not only sharing kind of personal stories, but also resources to go along with those to just help others in the community.
Well, we're going to circle back around and definitely announce this at the end, but go ahead and tell folks where they can find the website, the podcast, and that that toll-free number.
Yeah, so our website is autismspeaks.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Autism Speaks. Our podcast is available on all the different podcast platforms, so just search Autism Speaks, and you can subscribe to listen to our episodes or, you know, download those that are interesting. You can communicate with us via Facebook Messenger, Twitter. We monitor, you know, Instagram direct message. I mean, we monitor all forms of communication. And then our autism response team, they can be reached at 1-888-288-4762 or familyservices@autismspeaks.org.
You've definitely got chops that it seems like you do this before. I feel like that you should be the one asking questions and I'm the one that should be just, that's what I got when I walked in because, and I'm not going to make this show about me, but being diagnosed autistic late in life, it gave me, an enormous sense of peace to know what I was dealing with. But then again, you know, I got into it only having a limited exposure to know what that was. And then I doubted whether or not what I knew was correct. And when I came to the Atlanta offices and Amadee, she can tell you about this. It's one of those few times that you get into a room and you feel absolutely comfortable because your tics and your weirdness is absolutely not a thing anymore. Kimberly, tell us some of the earmarks or telltale signs so that a parent can, or even somebody who thinks they may have it, that what are some of the overarching symptoms, as it were, for autism?
Yeah. So I love that you used, you know, the word that, you know, you found peace, you know, with your diagnosis. And, you know, I just encourage, you know, the signs and symptoms of autism that Autism Speaks shares and, you know, the CDC also shares and, you know, the American Academy of Pediatrics and everything. I mean, keep in mind, you know, these are focused on, you know, early childhood. And so, you know, these symptoms are very different for adults. We now know through research and stuff that adults are very underdiagnosed and we don't have good information for that. And so one of our focuses is, of course, on more adult services and resources because a lot of the parents that reach out to us that are concerned about their child's development or maybe their child does receive a diagnosis, they're, you know, also saying to us, you know, I was just like, you know, my son, my daughter is a child. And, you know, I think that maybe I'm on the spectrum and kind of knowing now how to help my child helps me better understand myself and could have made, you know, maybe my middle school, high school, you know, college, you know, experience a little bit easier, just having a better understanding of myself. So it's very important, you know, that we trust our gut and, you know, and our intuition and that parents also kind of do the same. I, you know, that's kind of for my son, you know, I noticed that, you know, he had all the core, you know, symptoms. He had social communication challenges, you know, he wasn't speaking, you know, and hitting those developmental milestones. And he had really restrictive, repetitive behaviors that, you know, as a kid sometimes, you know, especially a toddler, we kind of find, you know, cute or funny and, you know, and not really realizing that these are symptoms. And, you know, as he was getting older, you know, we're really seeing that these were persisting, you know, that he was having issues, these were causing issues with his, you know, daily living. You know, we were noticing the sensory issues. He was having issues with loud sounds, lights, restrictive to certain smells, tastes, but, you know, really the social and communication. So, you know, the way that he was, you know, both the verbal and nonverbal. So, you know, not gesturing by, you know, a certain age and things like that. And so just, and my gut was just kind of like, hey, you know, while our pediatrician was like, oh, he's a boy, you know, boys just develop later. Just definitely felt like something, you know, more was going on. And I'm really glad that we did seek out that diagnosis. And I encourage anyone, you know, to go through these steps and, you know, seek it out. You know, and it might not be autism. It could be any number of things. But knowing, you know, sooner rather than later, and just starting those interventions, you definitely, you know, change the trajectory of your child's outcome. And so it's why Autism Speaks really, we actually just launched, I think it was yesterday, our new ad campaign council with the ad council, using Julia and Sesame Street about, you know, learn the signs of autism, because the awareness and knowing that is just so critical for families.
What my mind first came to when, I don't know if this is common, but, there, you know, for quite a while, if there was any kind of outburst with a child, young adult or an adult, it was kind of earmarked as bipolar or manic, and that stuck for a long time. Just strictly ADD and ADHD. And I think it was, I may be wrong about this, but it's like along the evolution, I can see earmarks definitely of the ADD and the ADHD variety. But then there are those symptoms, like you said, as far as I understand it, are very specific to autism. Like, I mean, I want to jump out of the chair when you said it, like loud, sudden noises, really bright lights, certain strong, sour smells. Those are really specific to autism, right? Or am I wrong about that?
Correct. No, you are correct. I mean, they can also be, there's also sensory integration or sensory processing disorder, you know, and that kind of can go hand in hand. But I was just talking to some young adults on the spectrum today at a company that they work that employs adults on the spectrum. And one of the young men who's, I think he's in his mid to late 20s, was kind of sharing with me, you know, that and Autism Speaks wasn't, you know, in existence when he was diagnosed. And his parents, you know, did a lot as far as, you know, sensory integration and trying to help him, because he's very sensitive to loud sounds.
Yes.
And he shared with me that, you know, even though that was super helpful, you know, and he can, you know, handle the hand dryers in a bathroom and the automatic toilet flushing and just all the things that you think about that we go through day in, day out, and sometimes take advantage of being able to do, and how that was just almost crippling to him to go about his day. You know, he can do those things, but to this day, he cannot listen to music on a headphone. He cannot do anything with headphones. He can, you know, he loves music, enjoys it, but has to listen to it, you know, on a speaker. And that just really resonated with me, because, you know, the core symptoms and things of autism, you know, we find ways to cope and, you know, to kind of get through our daily lives, but, you know, they're still there. So.
And the word cope, you know, it's people, they hear that sometimes and feel like that there's something left out with that. And in my experience, I really, what I want to do with shows like this is take the sting out of the words like that, that I've never felt like it all started, and I'm not trying to beat this horse to death, but when I was sitting with my psychiatrist probably 5 years ago, and I'd given him my books, and he read my poetry, and he says, Cliff, you know, I've thought when, you know, and we went through like a solid year of the testing and the conversation. And he said, you know, I can tell by the way you write how you're either away from society or you're in a dreamlike state. And some of the verbiage that I would use, like, has anybody ever thought or diagnosed you as autistic before? And the relief of it is that I'd had people very close to me who were in the therapy career in that sphere say, you know, ask me that. But my mind always went to Rain Man, not to make a joke out of it, but that was the only autism exposure that I had. in my life. So what I want to kind of springboard forward to is on the spectrum, people, you know, again, I want people to also be aware that there's a, like with almost everything of a nature of psychiatry or therapy, that there are levels, that there's a spectrum. Could you tell us some about the autistic spectrum?
Yeah. So I think it's really important, you know, that you mentioned that because one of our national board members, Dr. Stephen Shore, has, you know, a saying, and I think it's pretty common in the autism community, but if you've met one individual with autism, you've met one individual with autism. I mean, you can even attest, you know, to yourself that you're very different, you know, compared to other individuals that are on the spectrum. And how autism, you know, affects people are very different. And so, you know, it's important, you know, to not put, you know, everyone in a box and just be like, well, they're on the autism spectrum, and to really get to know each person, because everybody, you know, has their own strengths and their own, you know, uniqueness, and really to celebrate and embrace that. And I know you don't want to focus so much on you, but I think, Clifford, you are an amazing advocate, not just for yourself, but for other adults on the spectrum, to, you know, share your experience and to be able to share, you know, your journey and your path through this, to just, you know, shed even more awareness on this. And, you know, you might not feel like it, but you're making a huge difference. And, you know, really inspiring others, especially adults. You know, a lot of times I hear from adults who do get a diagnosis, but choose that they don't want to share it for fear of, you know, what this could mean with their family or friends or their job. And, you know, we're really trying to focus as an organization and get away from that stigma of autism being a negative thing, because it's not. It can really be beautiful, and it's part of, you know, who you are, and how to embrace that and to have the people around you embrace that.
I swore I wasn't going to cry on this show, Kimberly. No, it means a lot to me. No, I promise. I'm serious. That means a lot. It means a great deal. It does. And what I want to, I'm being serious. I really began to think about, and I printed off a list of famous individuals who are on the spectrum, and
yeah,
and some, there's the Dan Aykroyd, the actor, obviously, Hans Christian Andersen, the children's author, Tim Burton, the movie director, Charles Darwin, Emily Dickinson, Bobby Fischer, Albert Einstein, Thomas Jefferson,
yep,
Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, James Joyce, the author of Ulysses, Stanley Kubrick, the film director, Michelangelo, Mozart, Sir Isaac Newton, Seinfeld, William Butler Yeats, Nikola Tesla, and many of these folks in their own day and time were noted to be socially awkward, enjoyed their alone time, and by and large, they had vocations that gave them, again, as far as I understand it, what gives me the anxiety is what ramps up my tics and society. And that's something that everyone feels. People typically feel better alone. And the more people you're around, you know, that anxiety ramps up. But with autistic folks, like I'll make noises with my throat. And I'll make motions with my hands when I get around people. And those are the things that, and it's not to elicit any kind of, you know, pity from anybody, but that's when you get kind of self-conscious because you know you're doing it. And if someone in society sees you doing it and you see them see you, that anxiety ramps up and you begin to do it more.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So it's when people, for me, when I understood I had autism, I understood what those tics meant. And again, it relieves that anxiety when I know, okay, that's where that's coming from.
Yeah. And it's calming for you to do those things and
yes,
those high anxiety. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And
no.
It's go ahead. You go.
No, I was just going to agree with you. I mean, there's, you know, I see it as my son has gotten older. I mean, he's 13 now, but, you know, he has some tics And, you know, I admit it, as is mom, sometimes they drive me crazy. but, you know, they're soothing to him, or it drives his sister, you know, crazy, and his sister might find it embarrassing, but it's soothing to him. And, you know, we have to be accepting of that, because if that's what he needs to be able to do, you know, to be able to do this, you know, whatever activity as a family, then we have to support it. It's, you know, when those things become, you know, dangerous or hurtful to himself,
right,
you know, that then, you know, we obviously want to find another alternative so he's not hurting himself or others. But yeah, no, we do get, you know, you get self-conscious. I think, you know, my son's still very young and doesn't notice these things, you know, as much. So he's not as self-conscious, but, you know, his sister is self-conscious of it. You know, she's trying to fit in and blend in and things like that. And, you know, her friends are like, why is your brother doing that? You know, or making that noise. And, you know, it just, so, I mean, it's, you know, it's hard. It's hard as a society. You know, it's really hard.
What I think helps a great deal, and it is for the parents to understand, because as I worked for 6 years as a juvenile probation officer, I think people not on this phone call, not in this interview, but I mean seriously, but like many other people would judge parents because you think, well, just accept your child. And it's not, at least from what I saw, is that because we, again, in juvenile probation today, it takes nothing to get on juvenile probation, but it would be some kind of quirky behavior that the child had that the teacher, not blaming teachers, this is just the only example I have, would think that the child was doing it on purpose to act out in class. And then the parents are just frustrated because they don't know what it is. And so, again, when those parents, and I've seen it, and this is that's when I first started to wonder, like, I do that. I wonder if I'm autistic, that the relief in those parents just knowing what they're dealing with, you know, it was
absolutely
almost, it was literally immediate. It was immediate. And I could see that once the child understood what they had and they felt that love from the parents, I would, over a year period of time, because of the services we were allowed, because again, juvenile probation was extremely proactive. It's not what you know with the adult system or anybody would know. So we would have the therapeutic resources then that are, again, we're talking like 10 years ago. And in a decade, autism awareness and understanding has grown by leaps and bounds, correct?
Correct. Yeah. I think Autism Speaks has done an amazing job in working with the CDC and other partners, you know, both local and on a national, you know, level, to be able to share, you know, the signs and symptoms of autism. I think this, you know, new ad campaign with Julia having a Sesame Street character, you know, with autism has just really raised, you know, that level of awareness. And I'm noticing, you know, I mean, I'm talking to other, you know, friends who have kids on the spectrum, you know, siblings are more aware. I'm hearing, you know, they're going to their, you know, classrooms and, you know, they might have a peer in their class that's on the spectrum. And so they just, you know, pitch in and just are so much more accepting, you know, as children of that, oh, well, you know, this kid is just like my brother, or this, you know, friend is just like Julia on Sesame Street. And I think it's just really, fantastic and it's awesome. It's just, as these young kids grow up and become teenagers and young adults and adults and stuff, it's, you know, we'll continue to see more awareness and more acceptance. And one of our mission objectives at Autism Speaks is obviously working, you know, on, you know, employment and housing, because, you know, kids with autism grow up to be adults with autism. And so having those early intervention therapies are great, but also having the supports as an adult are very critical as well. And I think, you know, you can probably speak to that and how, you know, you're in your own journey and, you know, have experienced it yourself. I think that everything you do to help raise awareness and share your own story helps that, you know, parent who has a kid on the spectrum be like, you know, Clifford's journey was tough and it was long, and he's there, and it has just, you know, you know, the peace that you now have with it and just how you've embraced it, you know, kind of sets aside that worry for that mom or dad or grandparent, you know, who's like, what's going to happen when my kid's an adult? You know, and as an organization, you know, we're working really hard so that, you know, this isn't a barrier. You know, your child can still go on to live, you know, a super successful, fulfilling and happy life.
One of our personal mantras has been, with understanding, odd becomes unique. And
I like that. That's beautiful.
Thank you. I just made that up. Actually, I just scribbled that down. It's that creativity. That's what I'm kind of trying to segue into. Is when you say like jobs, you know, I was thinking today, specifically about this show, about jobs befitting, because it's not like, oh my God, you know, my child or I have this thing, so I can't go do this job or that job or job. But the reality of it is that all of us, for those of us who are not abjectly miserable, we said, well, man, I would love to do X, Y, or Z for a living, or a combination yeah. of those things. I don't see it as being autistic, eliminating somebody from their dream, because I've never met anybody, an adult, teen, or child that said, man, my dream is to do this, and this thing makes me miserable to think about. It's always something you want to really do, you know?
Yeah.
For me, writing fit perfectly, because it was something I loved to do, and I started writing short stories because I created worlds, and not which I had control, but the people said and did things that made sense to me. And that's one of the barriers that autistic people, at least I have with society, is not that no one's doing what I want them to do. It's just that behaviors and actions don't match, and that creates an intense discomfort. So, you know, when my mom found my stories, I've always told this story when people say, like, well, when did you become a writer? But it has more meaning to me now, because I did well in school, but I've always been called a loner. That's a name that, like, all that those folks that I just read off that list, that's attributed to them. Well, they're kind of a loner. And it's because I think that having more understanding of it and being more aware of it every day, that we're inundated with the same stimuli as everyone else, obviously, but to us, it can overload us quickly. And so we withdraw, not because we don't like people, but because it just becomes too much. And so, you know, being a musician or a writer, I love, and again, people like, but lawn maintenance, lawn care, being outside is a huge help to me. You know, the exercise and being out in the sun. And then also it's jobs that, again, you can regulate your exposure to society. And again, it's one of those things that I think everybody wants to. I mean, we don't get up in the morning and go, man, I would love to hang out with people that get on my nerves today. Only those people. Please, Lord, let me be surrounded by irritating people. Nobody does that, you know. I hope not.
Yeah.
To me, it's like, it's when you talk about, you know, vocation services, you know, people that I think jobs like that, because I was watching, the astronomer, what's his name? Therese Mamadi, what's his name?
Now that you're asking, put me on the spot. I can't remember it. I know exactly what you're talking about. He's a famous guy. I'll think about it. Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah, Neil. Yeah,
there you go.
There's a really cool video.
That was
impressive. It was, man. I'm gonna go. No. No, he was a really. I'll send this video. I'll find this video. It's on YouTube, and I'll send it to Amity to put in the below in the comments of the bio of the show, where a girl gets up and asks who's autistic and asks him, you know, well, how do autistic people fit into your world? And he gives this incredible answer. He goes, oh, I work with them all the time. And then they let some of the most brilliant computer analysts and networkers and software, because it's where they can sit around people, but they are, even around people, they are in their own capsule. And we're very.
You said it correctly. You hit the nail on the head. Yeah.
And it's
no, I just I observe my son doing this, and it's so amazing how he has these friendships with other, you know, individuals on the spectrum, and they're like together, but also like know each other's boundaries in such a way, and it's so amazing, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's to me it's. I didn't know. I mean, there are things that you don't really, again, with guys, it's more amplified. Like, you know, we're going to be manly man. I'm going to eat some tree bark stuff. But, you know, talking on the phone gives me enormous anxiety. But like this, where I can see somebody on Skype, for some reason eliminates that anxiety for me. Is it on the spectrum of autism?
You know, I don't know. I don't know, honestly. I mean... I think technology has played such an interesting role in autism, if that makes any sense, especially
yes.
Now that we're like so mobile with technology and having the iPads and the iPhones. And, you know, when you were talking about, you know, sensory and things just kind of coming at you with the world, it just makes me think about just, you know, how many different ways we like communicate now. You know, you have Facebook Messenger and text messenger and phone and, you know, and just how different. And so, you know, how sometimes I think technology helps with, you know, the social and the communication aspects of autism. And, you know, and in certain ways, you know, technology can hurt that. But no, it's very interesting that you bring it up. I think that there is a lot of opportunity to do. And I know that there are some big tech companies and small tech companies that are looking at kind of, you know, those looking more at how technology can be used as a tool and a resource, you know, in the space period for, you know, all kinds of different, you know, assistance and things. And it's interesting. I don't know if I can say that that's a core, you know, symptom of autism specifically, but yeah, that's interesting.
In my experience, technology has made it better. Growing up, I can't believe I'm going to admit this. I always had a toy bag. You know, mom, I honestly give mad props to my mom and dad because they knew by the will of God what to do with me before autism was even said.
Yeah.
And my mom and both my parents, some of my behaviors can absolutely rub them the wrong way. But overall, I remember kind of, oh my God. But I remember their faces being more bemused. Like, that's a quirky little thing that he does. I never felt objectified or demeaned because of my oddities. My mom just realized early that if I had a toy bag, like with my stuff in it that I like to do that made me comfortable, I was no problem whatsoever. And at 44 years old, I still have one. I swear to God, I'm admitting this on the radio.
You have your fidgets?
Yes. I just never knew that's what it was. And as long as I've got that, I could sit there and be just, I mean, seriously, my girlfriend will go shopping or something. She'll just leave me in the car. You good? Yep, I'm good. And I'll sit there for hours, absolutely entertained, not a bit of anxiety. But you take that away, and it's Sir Grumps a lot. But again, it's learning about, you know, what it is. And, you know, again, I'll go back to the old G.I. Joe cartoon, like knowing is half the battle.
I totally agree with you. And, you know, and sometimes we don't know. And sorry to interrupt you. I see this with my own son, especially now through like his evolution. And some of it's just, you know, growth and development. But, you know, I mean, going back to the sensory, I mean, I was like, oh my God, we're never going to be able to leave our house because he can't handle automatic toilets and hand dryers. Like, we will never be able to leave the house. We will have to plan all of our outings around using the bathroom. And, you know, gradually it got to the point where, you know, I was able to give him certain fidgets or things, you know, and then gave him skills, like showing him how to cover his ears, you know, and, you know, and he slowly developed, you know, and then being able to have words to be able to express, you know, his discomfort. And now, you know, we're really working on him being able to advocate for himself. You know, he wants to please and make everybody happy. And so teaching him to be like, if this is uncomfortable, you know, it's okay, you know, to use a fidget to, you know, say you need a break to, you know, whatever these things are, because, you know, obviously, you know, the outcome of him trying to hold it all together, you know, it, it's you know, it takes an emotional and a physical toll, and you know, he needs to be his authentic self, you know, so... Yeah,
it is. I mean, do not be sorry. I mean, I'm not fighting for time to talk. I'm fighting from the beginning of, because where people, when I mentioned earlier, I'm just not to get, yes, I know exactly which, because when people would say, oh, these are manic episodes, oh, these are bipolar episodes, or when I had sat there in that futile attempt, and it's not trying to control yourself from raging. It's just, it's like trying to hold. All that's coming to mind is like spray cheese. You're trying to hold it into the can while having it pressed against your palm. I mean, it's this yeah. pressure that builds up over time, where finally you just go, look, I've got to get out of here. Because you're, until now, God bless. I mean, seriously, until now, I didn't know that what I was feeling was okay to say, like, this is too much. This is too much. And it's not, you know, again, I don't say it enough. And it's not the toxic masculinity coming out. You know, you don't want to seem like, other people that there's a weakness, and you know that you know, like, look, this there's, you know, especially when there's a conversation going on where more than one person's talking, and even if it's not heated, but it's even if it's not angry, but it's energetic, sometimes that can immediately become uncomfortable, because that heightened emotion coupled with the screaming is honestly, like, you know, it's like fingernails down a chalkboard times 10. Mm-hmm. And knowing now, and having myself surrounded with people that will hold me accountable, like, Cliff, we know you're autistic, but right now you're being a jackass. You know, like, those, I need those, you know, that's very valuable. You know,
no, I know,
but yeah,
I know.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it, but ultimately it's that former part about they get it, that alleviates that, and it holds me in check. You know, it's okay. I mean, if so many of these rules are for everybody. Don't subject yourself to friend groups where people are not being friendly. Yeah. You know, that's just
good mental health. You know, we're focusing on mental health and you know, caretaking of yourself. And this is the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Amadee, yeah. I feel like we've left you out of the conversation, man. You can throw in now. We will allow you to talk. Please proceed, sir.
I'm just sitting back and listening to this. I think the big thing that I'm taking away from this, having not been involved in that world specifically, but that I think a lot of artists, a lot of creative people, a lot of people in general can grow up with these scenarios that they think are somehow a comment on how they're just broken fundamentally somehow. If you grow up with some sort of a situation you're not aware of mentally, and that can what appears to be like handicap you as you're going through, because things are not built for you, and that's really easy to start building and perpetuating a narrative where you're not good enough, and that can affect so many areas of your life. And I think I really applaud the actions that we take now, where we're trying to recognize these things, really look at them, and then say, okay, how do we handle them? How do we, instead of just necessarily medicating them, how do we handle them through practices in life? How do we make things where, you know, people can exist and function and feel good? That's really the whole comment I have after listening to this conversation. I'm sitting back and letting you talk, but I'm glad that the conversation's happening.
Thank you. I mean, that's very true. I mean, you know, we might be focused on autism and whatever, but I mean, you know, our organization, I mean, what affects our community is not any different than what folk, you know, is, you know, where we work with in collaboration with a lot of other, you know, organizations, Down syndrome, you know, cerebral palsy. I mean, the bullying, you know, that, you know, individuals on the spectrum, you know, face is not any different than anyone else. We, you know, we're all human. We're all in this together. And it's a matter of just, you know, raising the awareness and, you know, more importantly, acceptance and, you know, becoming more educated about, you know, autism. I think I know with, you know, the statistics right now of 1 in 59 children being diagnosed on the spectrum, you know, there are more people out there that know someone on the spectrum than not. But still just educating yourself on autism and, you know, that specific person and how autism, you know, plays a role in their life just helps you accept them a little bit more. And it's not scary. And, you know, getting to know them as a person is just really important. And we need to do that for everyone to be able to, you know, get along and, you know, be accepting.
I think every walk of life and religion philosophy has this kernel in it that fear comes from misunderstanding. And mm-hmm. when we feel like we can't ask a question due to the fear of insulting someone, the repercussions of it is a perpetuation of discomfort, which becomes, no matter who it is, no one, again, wants to walk into and live in and perpetuate an uncomfortable situation. And those that do, that's an entirely different matter. But it's openly talking about these things, because what I've and it's a quirk of autism for me that we don't. And that this is in no way, like, I never use this to perpetuate bad behavior. I mean, I was talking to Amadei about this before we started the show, just what casts a bad shadow across any group is when that, and again, it's a very small minority of the group that uses it as an excuse to not do something or to misbehave in a way. But that's by far the smallest part of the group.
Yeah.
With autism, like, it's always come off more childlike to people, where I have this curiosity where I'll come up and say, like, you know, why is it that you do that? You know, I don't understand what this is. And 9.5 times, in fact, I can't remember a time where anybody's ever got offended that, you know, just being earnest and asking a question, just going to someone who has it or to a parent with a child that has it and not be afraid of offending anybody, because I have found every 10 out of 10 times that people are eager to talk to somebody who's honestly curious about it or thinks they have it, what it is, because it builds a community, that understanding.
I 100% agree with you. And even some of the things that, you know, we do, you know, just culturally and as a society, you know, I can't think of a good example now. I should really write down some of these things, you know, but my son will point out, you know, well, why do you not do this? Or why do you not say this, you know, in certain social situations? And, you know, it makes me pause and think, and I'm just like, I don't have a good answer. I don't know why you don't say or do that. Like, you just don't.
I've got some. Because we talked about this before. Now, I'm not good at math, but for people who want to know kind of a good archetype for autism is Sheldon off The Big Bang Theory. I mean, I had friends forever say, you know, again, now I'm horrible at math. Terrible at math. So I'm not saying this makes me kind of math whiz, but if someone says I made this from home, or in some way they insinuate or directly state, like, whatever food they have, they put a lot of effort into it, and they say, would you like some of this? And you say, no, I don't eat that. I don't like that combination of foods. I know this gospel of truth. That's rude. And, you know, it just in larger circles. And so for me, again, asking, like, well, why should I say yes when I don't want tofu anything, no matter how much effort went into it? It's just like, no, will you just say that because that person put a lot of effort into it? And even though I don't agree with that, I'm like, oh, well, it'll make everybody's time easier, and I'll just push it around with my fork and everybody feels better. It's being told and explained why that's important. You know, that doesn't make me want to eat anything.
That's a really good example.
Yeah. I've got them all. And again,
it's a great example.
Because it's like, well, why is that rude? Because I'm told not to lie. And if I say yes, I want some when she asks me. So, yeah. So, again, it's not like, well, I don't want, we're not going to go out and just start lying at free will. It's just in that one situation, because what we want to do more than anything is feel comfortable. And again, that's what everybody wants. But if it's explained to us, that removes the anxiety. We'll just go, yeah, Aunt Beth, I would love some of that tofu that smells like a foot. That, come on, put it on my plate. And I'll just push it around with my fork and everybody's happy. So it's not that, you know, we have to agree and change the world. It's like, why is that important? So, I mean, yes, I love this show. And and Kimberly, what I'd like to do is I want to extend an invitation that when something big comes up with Autism Speaks, or like a breakthrough or anything, we'd love to have you back on to continue to talk about this.
I would love to. I'm not a scientist or a researcher, but I try to talk and explain the best that I can. So, yeah.
And you do a fantastic job, and it's never to put down scientists, but sometimes scientists talk too sciencey, you know, and I'm not hating on them, but having it, so it's like, you're like the...
I need it translated.
people want to know the more in detailed statistics and reports behind this, they can go to autismspeaks.org, correct?
Yes. Please visit autismspeaks.org. We have great information about autism facts, autism figures, the symptoms of autism, great information, as I said, about from our autism response team. So we support the entire autism lifespan. So from, early intervention and diagnosis all the way through adulthood, we support the entire autism spectrum. Because again, as we said earlier, as you've met one individual with autism, you've met one individual with autism. We have some great resources, throughout, the school, everything involving sensory integration, haircuts, going to the dentist, housing, employment. I mean, we have resources and services and supports for it. So visit autismspeaks.org.
People are going to think we practice this, Kimberly. They're going to think we practice this. This is too good. And I'm serious. And to donate money or time, they go to the same website?
Yes. If you visit autismspeaks.org, so our signature fundraising event is our walk. We have an Autism Speaks walk. We have over 70 walks across the country and in Canada. So you can find the closest walk to you. Some of our local chapters and offices have other special events like galas or golf outings or 5Ks. So you can also find out information on Autism Speaks, where your local office is, and contact information. And you can reach out to them directly and find out, ways to volunteer and get involved. However much time you have or however little time you have, we are a very grassroots organization. So every volunteer is so important to the work that we do.
Kimberly, I cannot thank you enough for coming on the show tonight. This has been fantastic.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun. You guys are a lot of fun. And Clifford, thank you again so much for all that you do to raise awareness and share your story, because it makes such a difference for everyone to just hear your journey and to know that they're not alone and to know that they can reach out to you with questions and support. So thank you for all you do.
Both Cliff and I want to say thank you for spending your time with us. And we also want to say thank you to Kimberly Dick. You can find out more about her cause at autismspeaks.org.
You can find Cliff Brooks at cliffbrooks.com. Also, southerncollectiveexperience.com. You can find me at michaelamide.com or worldpoetryopenmic.net.
The music for this episode was provided by the fantastic Justin Johnson. You can find him at justinjohnsonlive.com. The goal of this podcast is to give you ideas and tactics that you can apply to your own creative life. Until next time, remember to be courageous, do the hard work, conquer your obstacles creatively, learn to trust your heart, for it's easy to lose your path in this business of music and poetry.